Corinthians. I'm turning this evening to Daniel chapter 11 and to verse 32. And such as do wickedly against the covenant shall be corrupt by flatteries. But the people that do know their God shall be strong and do exploits. And our title for this evening and few weeks ahead, we are going to study the attributes of God. The attributes of God. The next time we have the opportunity, we'll continue to do a series on the attributes of God. So as we look at the second part of verse 32, said, but the people that do know their God shall be strong and do exploits. So it is very, very important to study the attributes of God. The attributes of God mean the being, who God is, God's own being. And we have so many attributes of God. We have the communicable attributes and then we have the non-communicable attributes. The communicable ones are the ones that God shares with mankind and the ones that are only to God exclusively. And it is very, very important to know this. If you know who God is, it will have impact in your life. The way you pray to God, the way you worship God, the way you see God will progress. Because now we live in days that if people really know their God, we wouldn't see the kind of prayers that we see in our days, where people seem to be commanding God as if God is under their control. So it is very, very important to know who God is. And we are going to learn more about his omnipotence, his omniscience. We are going to learn about his holiness, his sovereignty, his self-reliance, and his self-existence. Now we hear of people who say that they are self-existent. We hear some kings who are called themselves Odinehu and all this, but no human being can say Odinehu. No human being. And people are also giving human titles to God and taking God's titles to themselves. So it is very, very important that we study this thing. The purpose is of this series, like I said, is to align our thinking with God, with those characteristics that have been revealed in the scriptures. God can only be known through scriptures, because we never see God and live. Nobody can see God and live. We can only know him through the scriptures. So please bear with me, because we'll be going through many scriptures to prove who God is as we go through this series. For today is going to be an introduction of these attributes. And then, like I said, the next time we have the opportunity, we'll continue with the main attributes. We'll take them one by one. So we are going to study God's attributes. And it means seeing God as he is. We have to see God as he is. As we learn from the Daniel account, the people who know their God shall be strong. If you don't know your God, you can never be strong. Like I said, you go to God and then you pray mechanically. Because you go to God, you don't know who you are going to. But if you know who you are going to, the kind of God you are going to, you know the way to pray, and then you'll be strong. So seeing God as he is, this is a life-transforming experience. Once you know who God is, it will change your life. Knowing his greatness and his glory. And this has transformed so many lives, as we are going to see, both in our days and in biblical times. People who got to know God and how it impacted in their, how their prayers were shaped. This is the reason why some people could lay down their lives. Because they got to know who God is. They trusted God. Otherwise, sometimes when I look at Daniel and co, when they were being put in lion's den and they were still prepared to hold on, it tells that they had gotten to know God. They knew God. And they knew what God could do. So it's very, very, very important that we go through all these things. And like I said, there have been so many godly people, even in our days, in our times, especially the reformers and the Puritans, that they spent time to study this attribute of God and to know who God is. And we are going to learn from some of them today. They had a passion to know God. And like I said, this is why they were able to stand. Even when it comes to death, they could stand and defend God. So, as our lesson, we are going to demonstrate the importance of studying the attributes of God today. So for the first time, we are going to consider the testimony of some of these great men that I'm talking about. And then later on, we'll be looking at the practical benefits of such a study. Why should we study the attributes of God? We are going to study, we are going to learn about the practical benefits, what we can get, we can gain from the study of God's attributes. And then finally, I hope there will be time, otherwise we'll continue next week. We are going to see how this study of the attributes of God have impacted the lives of two great men of God in scriptures. And I'm talking of Job and Moses. I hope we can have time to look through them. But we'll see. Otherwise, we'll continue next week. And my hope is that this lesson will stimulate you to begin your own personal study of the attributes of God. It is a study that can transform your life. And please, like I said, bear with me. We are going to go through scriptures to prove our point. First, we start with the men of God who have studied these attributes of God and what they say about the character of God, so that it will encourage us to also do the same thing. And as we consider them, we see what they say about studying the attributes of God. First, we talk of one A.W. Tozer. Over 30 years ago, Tozer is an American pastor, and in fact he became a Christian when he was about 20 years, and he's a writer. He's written so many books, but his emphasis was the need for a deeper knowledge of God and the development of our inner life. Because the more you know God, the more your spiritual life grows. And for this reason, he was described as evangelical mystic. That is Tozer. And he wrote concerning the desperate need of the church to revise their concept of God so that they will know. Because he felt at the time that people were having a distorted view of God. So he had to correct them. People must know the true God. Like I said, that's what we are seeing in our days. Listen to people praying on television, on wherever, and they are praying as if God is under them. They can command God to do what, even if God doesn't want to do, because of them, God must do. It will shape your prayer life. So let's see what Tozer said. First, he said, "It is my opinion that the Christian conception of God, current in these middle years of the 20th century, is so low. Our knowledge of God, our study of God, our conception of God is so low as to be utterly beneath the dignity of the Most High. And actually, to constitute for professed believers something amount to a moral calamity." What he's saying is that people's view of God is so low. They take God as if he's a human being, even less than a human being. So he went on to say that the heaviest obligation lying upon the Christian church today is to purify and elevate her concept of God until it is once more worthy of him. They have to know God as he is, as is worthy of him. That was A.W. Tozer, a great writer in those days. Then we can talk of A.W. Pink. I'm sure many of you have learned about A.W. Pink. He is the one who wrote a book called The Attributes of God. He has a complete book about the attributes of God. He was also a biblical scholar and an evangelist. He was born in Nottingham, in England, on April 1st, 1886. He too became a Christian when he was very young, about 20 years. He also had the same opinion. Look at what he said. He said, "The God of this century no more resembles the sovereign of holy writ than does the dim flickering of a candle the glory of the midday sun. The God who is talked about in the average pulpit, spoken of in the ordinary Sunday school, mentioned in much of the religion literature of the day, and preached in most of the so-called Bible conferences, is a figment of human imagination, an invention of mundane sentimentality. The heavens, the heathen outside the pale of Christendom, that is those who are not even Christians, they form gods of wooden stones. While millions of people who say they are Christians, they manufacture God out of their own carnal minds." That's what A.W. Pink said about the attributes of God. And then Martin Luther, our own Martin Luther, also in one of his letters to Erasmus, he says, your thoughts of God are too human. He says, your thoughts of God are too human. And in him, Psalm 50 that we just read, verse 21, he said, these things have thou done, and I kept silence. Thou thoughtest that I was altogether such as one as thyself. That means we think God is just like one of you. But I will reprove thee and set them in order before thine eyes. I don't know how it will be difficult to even overestimate the importance of the study of God. Let's see what Spurgeon, our own man too, said. He said, nothing will so enlarge the intellect, nothing so magnify the whole soul as a devout, earnest, continual investigation of the great subject of the deity. The most excellent study for expanding the soul is the science of Christ and Him crucified and the knowledge of the Godhead in the glorious Trinity. It is very, very important to know God. And like I said, look at all these great men, what they said about the God's attribute. He said the proper study of the Christian is the Godhead. That is the proper study. Everything we do must come from this, the highest science, the loftiest speculation, the mightiest philosophy, which can engage the attention of a child of God, is the name, the nature, the person, the doings, and the existence of the great God, which He calls His Father. You call God your Father, but you know who He is. You must know, but you can only know by studying His attributes. And from what Spurgeon is saying, that it means the study of God's nature and character is the high calling of the Christian, and is of great importance and of a practical value. Why? Even if you want to know what you were made for, how will you know? It is true that the answer is to know God. If you want to know why you are here, what God created you, the answer is to know God. If you want to know the aim that you should set for yourself in this world, what should you do? The answer is to know God. If you want to know the eternal life that Jesus Christ gives, the answer is knowledge of God. Because in John 17 verse 3, Jesus said, and this is eternal life, that they might know thee, the only true God, and Jesus Christ whom thou hast sent. Knowing God is the answer to everything, to eternal life, to knowing who you are, to knowing what you should set up as your aim in this world. All of this can be known through the study of God. And what is the best thing in life that can bring you joy and delight and contentment? We learn about contentment this morning, than anything else. And the answer is to know God. If you know God, all your problems will be in place. You will know exactly who you are and why God has put you here. In Jeremiah chapter 9 verse 23, he says, thus saith the Lord, let not the wise man glory in his wisdom, neither let the mighty man glory in his might. Let not the rich man glory in his riches, but let him that glory in this, that he understands and knoweth me. This is God speaking, that a person understand and know God. That is where you should glory in, not in riches, not in fame, in anything, but to know God. And in Hosea chapter 6 verse 6, God says, he says, of all the states of man, there's no state that the state of man that give God more pleasure than the knowledge of himself. There's no state that you will be in that will give God more pleasure than to know him. Look at what he says in his Hosea 6 verse. He says, I desire the knowledge of God more than burnt offerings. That is what God is saying. He desires you to know him more than anything else. That is the state in which, when you come to that state that you know God, that is the one that gives God more pleasure. And like I said, once you become aware that the main business why you are in this world is to know God, life problems fall into its places. There's no problem in this world that will overtake you once you come to know your God. And like I said, that is why people in the Bible could lay down their lives for God, because they got to know him. They knew who he was. Now, I want to come to the practical relevance of the character to the Christian. Because I'm sure some people will say, knowing God, attributes of God, these things are for the theologians or for pastors. No, it is for all Christians. There's another great writer, J.I. Packer. He read this same question, but the same person gave an answer. Let's see what he said. He said, why need anyone take time off today for the kind of study you propose? That's about the attributes of God. Surely a layman at any rate can get on without it. What he's saying is that a layman who is not a pastor, an ordinary Christian, can get on in life without studying the attributes of God. Fine, this question is very fair. But look at another answer that he himself gave. He said, the questioner clearly assumes that a study of the nature and character of God will be unpractical and irrelevant for life. In fact, however, it is the most practical project anyone can engage in. That is what he's saying, it's the most practical that anyone can get in. See, knowing about God is crucially important for the living of our lives. Disregard the study of God and you sentence yourself to stumble and blunder through the blindfold, as it were, with no sense of direction and no understanding of what surrounds you. This way, you can waste your life and lose your soul. That's what J.I. Packer is saying. If you don't study God, if we think that study about God is just about for a thing for pastors and theologians, he's telling you that if you don't study, you waste your life and lose your own soul. So now, I'm sure that with this, as we study these attributes, it will challenge all of you to embrace the idea and you endeavor on your own personal commitment to know God. How can we know God? How can we know God? We can know God in so many ways that we study the attributes, and it will impact a Christian life. So let's see how God is revealed in the scriptures. Because like I said, nobody has ever seen God personally. Those who have seen God have seen him in different forms. So let's see how he showed himself to people. Firstly, the way to see God is to come to know him through a study of his character as revealed in the scriptures. Because in Exodus chapter 33, verse 20, it says, no man can see God and live. No man can see God and live. And then in John, in our New Testament, John chapter 1, verse 18, it says, no man has ever seen God at any time. Christ said that. Men have seen God partially at various times when he has appeared in various forms. You can read Exodus chapter 24, verse 9 to 11, 33, verse 17, 34, verse 7, so many of them. But I'll read only one, the Exodus 24. Then went up Moses and Aaron, Nadab and Abihu, and 70 of the elders of Israel. And they saw the God of Israel, and there was under his feet, as it were, a paved work of a sapphire stone, and as it were, the body of heaven in his clearness. And upon the nobles of the children of Israel, he laid not his hand. Also they saw God, and did eat and drink. Then in Isaiah chapter 6, verse 5, he says, above is two the seraphims, each one has six wings. With twain he covered his face, and with twain he covered his feet, and with twain he did fly. And one cried unto another and said, holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory. And the posts of his door moved at the voice of him that cried out. And the house was filled with smoke. Then said I, woe is me, for I am undone, because I am a man of unclean lips, and I dwell in the midst of people of unclean lips. For my eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts. It's not like they saw God physically, but you see how God revealed himself to them in those forms. That's how they see God. And in every instance when God has manifested himself visibly to man, it has been a partial revelation. Even Christ, when Christ came, because Christ said nobody has seen the Father, so he is the one who has shown the Father. Even Christ, his real self was always veiled until only one place when Christ revealed his real being. In Matthew chapter 17 from 1 to 8, if you turn there, that's when Christ was transcended and his real self was shown. So before then, he manifested himself in so many forms. As people were seeing him, he was veiled. it was not his true glorious body that people were seeing until his transfiguration. Just once that people got to know. And they couldn't even look at him. Just like we can't gaze at the sun the same way we can't gaze at the glory of God. So it was Christ, why did he appear in that form? Because it was not the physical appearance that should impress men. Because according to the Bible, he wasn't a very attractive person. Christ wasn't a very handsome person that people, like in our day, people even vote for the handsomeness of our leaders. Christ wasn't like that. Because how do we know that? Isaiah chapter 53 verse 2, speaking about the Lord, he said, "For he shall grow up before him as a lender plant, and as a root out of a dry ground. He had no form, nor comeliness." Comeliness means attractiveness. "And when we shall see him, there's no beauty that we should desire him." So he came in a form, not like any attractive person. And we, in our time, we are people who have not seen God. We have not seen, even we didn't see Christ when he was on earth. So we have not even seen God in the when he appeared in the form of Christ. Secondly, why is it relevant to we Christians? The second point is that the character of God is the basis and standard for all human morality. The character of God, that is the basis for our human morality. So how can we know this? In Judges chapter 21 verse 25, he said, "In those days there was no king in Israel. So everyone did what was right in his own eyes. Because there was no king, everything did what was right in their own eyes." And people think that the solution to the fact that there was no king, there had to be a human king. And that's why they were asking for a human king. They asked Samuel to give him their own king. They wanted a king, somebody they can see, not knowing that when they get that person, they are going to see that person as their idol. God wanted to rule from wherever he was. Man wanted somebody that they can see. Even though God warned them that if I give you this and what they are going to do. Look at what they said to Samuel. He said, "Behold, you have grown old, and your sons do not walk in your ways. Now appoint a king for us to judge us like all the other nations." But look at what he said. "But the thing was displeasing in the sight of Samuel when they said, 'Give us a king to judge us.' And Samuel prayed to the Lord. And the Lord said to Samuel, 'Listen to the voice of the people in regard to all that they say to you.'" But look at what he said. "For they have not rejected you, but they have rejected me." They have rejected God from being king over them. So when Israel demanded their human king, in a way, they were rejecting God. Not Samuel. They were rejecting God as their king. And when you reject God as your king, you know the consequence. We are seeing them in our days. See? Because God is not our king. God, we are not living by God's principles. We see what is happening in our days. And in those days, it was the same thing. God gave his laws to the nation of Israel when he became king of them. In Exodus chapter 15 verse 18, he said he demonstrated his power and sovereignty even during the time of King Pharaoh. And God demonstrated his power that to show them that he is the king of kings, and he says, and it is done. So he set down his constitution for the kingdom that he was about to establish. So God's standard is the standard of morality that is set for the conduct of his people. The laws of God that were set on Mount Sinai were those that proceed from his own character. So God said to his people, "Be ye holy, for I am holy." Leviticus chapter 11 verse 44 to 45. So is it any wonder that in our days people are doing things as they want? People now reject anything about God, anything about holiness. Even in the pulpits, nobody is talking about holiness. People are just promising them good things, good wife, good husband, good job, money, fame. Nobody is talking about living in holiness as God requires of us. So we have ceased to ponder and appreciate the moral perfection of God. Nobody is talking about that now. And all this because we have not come to know God. And our view of His holiness is so diminished. Our moral values have declined. And the study of the character of God, like I said, is not there at all. Nobody is studying. We are all studying things for ourselves, what we can gain for ourselves. The third point is that failure to think rightly about God is also a sin of idolatry. If you don't think right about God, it leads to idolatry, and it leads to countless other things. We know what idolatry is. I've just talked about it. That is why Tozer said that the distorted view of God is idolatry. Because we are worshipping idols. If you know who God is, like I said, you wouldn't come to Him praying and shouting as we are seeing now. So, if you don't allow God to rule you or live by His principles, then you become His enemy, isn't it? You hate God. That's why you want somebody that you can see to worship Him. And it is a very serious sin before God. Look at what Tozer said again. He said, I believe there is scarcely an error in doctrine or a failure in applying Christianity that cannot be traced finally to imperfect and ignoble thoughts about God. If you don't think of God as He is, he is saying that it is idolatry, and that is what has caused the decline in morality in our days. Wrong thoughts about God was the root cause of sin, of the problem in this world that Adam and Eve faced. Because when God has said, if you touch this, you will die, Satan came and said, has God said this? No, it is not true. So he came to demean God, and then Adam and Eve believed. It's about wrong thought of God. You see, because he portrayed God as a liar. The God who cannot lie, the devil portrayed him to Adam and Eve as if God is a liar. He said, you surely shall not die. He told them, that means God was a liar. So, because Eve believed him, he also acted independently of God. And she and her husband thus therefore disobeyed God. And we all know the consequences that we are all facing as a result about that. And the fourth thing is that knowing God intimately is our calling and our destiny. Remember, God created us to come and worship Him, to glorify Him, and enjoy Him forever and ever. So knowing Him intimately is our calling and our destiny. It's our future hope and our great privilege and our blessing. And that it should be our great ambition. 1 Corinthians chapter 13 verse 12 says, for now we see in a mirror dimly, but then face to face now. Now I know in part, but then I shall know fully, just as I also have known fully. Now we are seeing in part, but when the time comes, we will see God in reality. And then in Philippians chapter 3 verse 10, he said, that I may know Him and the power of His resurrection and the fellowship of His sufferings, being conformed to His death. And in John chapter 3 verse 2, we also read, beloved, now we are children of God, and it has not appeared as yet what we shall be. We shall know that when He appears, we shall be like Him, because we shall see Him as He is. So you see, knowing God intimately is our greatest calling. It is our destiny. It is our hope and our blessing in everything we do. Let's see what Paul said in Ephesians chapter 3 verse 14 to 19. It says, for this reason, I bow my knees before the Father, from whom every family in heaven and on earth derives its name, that He will grant you, according to the riches of His glory, to be strengthened with power through His Spirit in the inner man, so that Christ may dwell in your heart through faith, and that you, being rooted and grounded in love, may be able to comprehend with all the saints what is the breadth and length and height and depth, and to know the love of Christ which surpasses knowledge, that you may be filled up to all the fullness of God. So we know this is our high calling, to know God. Our fifth point is that a study of the attributes of God is the basis of our enjoyment of God and our spiritual growth. The study of Him is the basis of our enjoyment, for our enjoyment, and also of our spiritual growth. So a personal relationship with God requires that we know God personally as a person. That we know Him personally. Do you know God personally? You must know Him as a person. And how can you know Him? You can only know Him through His attributes. The attributes of God, this shows the character of God. And then if you know His attributes, then you come to know Him personally and you know Him as a person. 2 Peter chapter 1 verse 4 says, by faith in Jesus Christ we have been saved, so we might become partakers of the divine nature. And Ephesians chapter 4 verse 13 says, we have become a part of the church, the body of Christ, which is growing up to the measure of the stature that belongs to the fullness of Christ. By seeing Him as He is, we become like Him. And in John 3 verse 2, it says, knowing God's character is therefore the basis of our own transformation into His likeness. How do you become like Him if you don't know Him? You need to know Him before you can become one like Him. And the sixth point is that the attributes of God are foundational to our faith and our hope. These attributes is our foundation for our faith and our hope. Because knowing the character of God will assure you that He can, and He can do all what He has purposed and He has promised. If you don't know Him, you can't trust Him. That's why I said that those in the early times, they knew God, so they could lay down their lives, knowing that even if they die, God will bring them back to life. So knowing God is the foundation of your faith and your hope. Because of our time, I'll just write through. You can jot down Hebrews chapter 10, verse 23. Let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering, for He who has promised is faithful. If you know Him, you know that He's faithful. And He, once He has promised, He will do it. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 6, 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 19. You can jot them down, and later on, you can also look. And I said earlier on, a study of the attributes of God also enhances our worship. Like I said, if you know who God is. Last Friday, I was having some kind of discussion with an old friend at NHIA, and we're talking about the way people are worshiping. The same thing we talk almost every day. We have to worship in this way because our youth are living. So I said, even if it doesn't please God, you will do it. So we are putting the youth before God. And it's all because they don't know God. I told him that if you know who God is, you can't go and stand God before God and be dancing. If you know Him, that He is the holy, holy God, the creator of heaven and earth, the God who is self-existent, you can't go and a mere person like you go and stand before God and be dancing. You can't even go and stand before a president and be dancing. How can you go and stand before God and be dancing? Because people don't know God. If you know Him, it will shape the way you worship God. You come in reverence. Come, God is the reverend. We don't know our human beings, most reverend and what? Very reverend and all these things. How reverent are they? God is the only one who deserves our reverence. We come to God with deep, deep, deep respect because of who He is. If you don't know Him, you wouldn't know all these things. So that you come to Him and worship Him as He is. In Revelation chapter 4, verse 8, it says, and the four living creatures, each one of them having six wings, are full of eyes around and within. And day and night they do not cease to say, holy, holy, holy. They are praising God. The Lord God, the Almighty, who was and who is and who is to come. God is the Alpha and the Omega. He was and He is and He is to come. No human being can be like that. If you know this about God, you will approach God with seriousness and with much respect. Psalm 7 verse 17 says, I will give thanks to the Lord according to His righteousness and will sing praises to the name of the Lord Most High. Today, talk about praise and go and see what they are doing there. As praises. These churches now have a time for praises, about 30 minutes. And all kinds of music going there. You can even find reggae music going there, adoa being played there. I've been to a church singing all these things and they say it's a praise worship. It's amazing. It's very, very sorry. I mean, very, very sad that because people don't know God, they worship Him according to how they think. They worship Him as if He's just one of them, as Spurgeon said. In Psalm 107 verse 1, he said, oh, give thanks to the Lord, for He is good, for his loving kindness is everlasting. Our next point is that study of the attributes of God should enhance our prayer life. I've said that already. If you know who God is, when you come before him, you'll be shivering. You have come before a king, a holy, holy God, whom you don't even deserve, but he has given the opportunity to come. So you come with deep reverence and pray to him exactly the way he wants you to pray to him. You can't come and be saying all kind of things. Also, the study of the attributes of God also will enhance your witness. If we have the opportunity to pray to other people, if you know who God is, it will also enhance the way you present God, the way you present your gospel, because you yourself know God. So you have the confidence to tell other people about God. And men can only be saved when they come to recognize that they are lost. And they will see their sin only when they begin to recognize that God as the one who is holy and righteous and just. In the morning, I was telling you about this young lady we met yesterday and talking about sin. He just said, as for her, she doesn't do this, so she hasn't sinned. Forgetting about sins of the mind. If you know God, now you know that God is omniscient. God knows your heart. He knows everything about you. You can't come and stand before God. So when you are preaching, you preach exactly the way God is. And then other people too will know. Then they will know that they are sinners. Because it is between them and the holy, holy, holy God. So it will enhance your witnessing. And the last point is that seeking to know the character of God will enhance and enrich your study of scriptures. If you really, really want to know God, it will enhance your study of scriptures. You don't go and just pick the Bible and just read one and then that's all you go. You be diligent in your study with the word of God because you want to know him. And you can only know him through his word, the way he has revealed himself in his word. Our last point is that when we focus on the attributes of God, we begin to view life from a new perspective. Then now you begin to view life from God's perspective, not from your own perspective, because you know who God is, that he's a holy, holy God, a supreme God. The human mind cannot even comprehend you. And then you come knowing him. So because of our time, I think we can't go on. Otherwise, I would like us to also study about Job and Moses, how the study of the attributes of God impacted in their lives. I'm sure I've been able to let you know the importance of studying the attributes of God. So many points we have laid down, so many Bible chapters we have quoted. I'm praying that you have time of your own to take this as a study. If you want a book about the attributes of God, I can get you one from our bookshop. It is very, very important to study and know the attributes of God, and it will enhance your life, your prayer life, it will shape up your life. And you be like God. You know who God is and you aim to be like him. My prayer is that you take this in seriously and embark on this study of the attributes